keep on kissing babies and hugging fat girls.
He's alive! Kane is alive, Undertaker!
You are a sniveling little suck-up sellout full of suffering succotash, son!
It's me, Austin!
Oh, son of a bitch!
What? It's me, Austin! It was me all along, Austin!
And your t-shirts are too tight too, Billy! And you book a match with me, that's right, Killings! Look at me! I'm a total package! I will rip him apart! I'm pissed now!
Where to, Stephanie?
Wrestle Roasts on ad-free shows and ATC.
Welcome, everyone, to Wrestle Roast. I'm your host, Robert Karpeles, and today I am joined by the dance fatty dance star himself, Mr. Dan St. Germain.
Yes, thank you, Forbidden Dorks, for checking the special out. We released it on Tuesday night. We're recording this Thursday early afternoon. We're already at 22,000 views. We want to keep that view count climbing, baby. So if you haven't seen it, please, after you're done listening to this episode, watch the special. It's free. Leave a comment. Follow me on Instagram. Join my YouTube channel. Join
Jesus
my
Christ. He's already whoring.
TikTok today. I'm going to be on the road, guys. If you're in Jersey, I'm going to be at Dojo East next Friday. And then Teehee's Comedy Club in Wisconsin. A lot of things are going on, folks. And I'm building up new material all the time. Yeah, I sound like Gil from The Simpsons right now, but
I'm fucking sick of hearing Dan Schilling. But if you're not sick of hearing Dan Schilling, you can hear him on Rumor and Innuendo on the Friday episode. By the time you're listening to this, it would have already aired live, but you can catch it wherever you listen to podcasts.
I just did Mask Man today, and I'm doing Something to Wrestle this week, so I'm going to be all over your fucking wrestling podcast sphere, guys.
Wait, you're doing Bruce's show?
Yeah, I'm coming in.
Don't have guests.
Well, I guess I'm coming in for a couple minutes.
Well, there we go. That'll be does Conrad know that you have a podcast on his network, or is he going to suddenly be like, y'all got a Wrestle Roast show? It's crazy.
Yeah, you know, he's fine. He's fine as long as I don't try to take down one of his hosts in the first like 2 minutes, I'll be okay. By the way, my host, Roast of Ric Flair, is available online, too.
Yeah, exactly. I do two shows for Conrad, so he ain't listening, guys. But he found out that Dan has a special, and in his mind, he thought, well, he might have money to buy a house. I'm going to sell that fucker a mortgage.
That's true.
That is true. By the way, speaking of people who may someday have a mortgage, Scott Chaplin he's on the road while we're recording this. He's doing his own take that'll get put in at the end of this episode, where he'll talk about Dynamite, where it'll go from dope to super dope. But we're gonna start by talking about the other company that exists, a little company called World Wrestling Entertainment. And Dan, the WrestleMania card it's kind of insane how good this looks.
This is the best. You know, we thought last year was good. And this year is far superior than last year. There doesn't seem to be a week. I'm even excited for the tag ladder match, which I know you guys aren't, but I am.
I am. That's just Scott.
Yeah. That's just Scott. Okay. Yeah, well, I think it's going to be good, because I thought the one at 33, that was like the best part of WrestleMania 33, right? Actually, AJ Styles versus Shane was unexpectedly great. And Goldberg versus Brock was actually really good, too.
That wasn't that bad. Look, yeah. Here's the thing about this six-pack tag thing. In a perfect world, it would be Awesome Truth against Judgment Day straight up. The problem is, I get not everybody belongs on WrestleMania, but there's a lot of people and a lot of teams that have worked really, really hard that do deserve an opportunity to be showcased on WrestleMania. And when you have two nights, you do kind of need one or two matches where you're putting a bunch of folks in there. So I like, from a storyline perspective, it's Judgment Day getting screwed over. I still think it's going to be Awesome Truth. But there's five open slots. They said three Raw, two SmackDown. And if you take a step back and look at it, there's a lot of really good tag teams, but you've got the Authors of Pain and Street Profits, who are off feuding, so they'll probably, you know, compete in the tournament. They're not going to get in there. Same thing for Legado del Fantasma and the LWO. They have paths to have matches at WrestleMania. So from the SmackDown side, Dan, I think it's going to be pretty deadly and the new Catch Republic. Does that offend you? Or yeah.
I keep adjusting to the name New Catch Republic. I think it's a shirt company or something.
That's exactly what I think. It's like it's Hollister and New Catch Republic.
Yeah. Yeah, look, you want kind of like one car crash match on the card. This will be it. I do think that, you know, having R-Truth go over in a ladder match is better than having him go over in a tag, for the simple fact of you really only want one underdog going over, like highlighted him, like a three count underdog going over, and that will be Cody Rhodes. It's kind of why I think, you know, Sammy should job to Gunther still. So having R-Truth in a tag, I think, could take away from Cody a little bit. And yeah, man, I mean, all these guys are great workers. And like you said before, you know, having DIY in there.
Well, I think on the Raw side, you got to put DIY in there. You got to put Awesome Truth in there. And then the last team, it could be Imperium, but Imperium, I think, is going to be part of the Intercontinental title match. I think it's got to be New Day. Like, they can't do a WrestleMania without Kofi and Xavier.
Who are New Day going up against this week? They already have a qualifying match.
I haven't looked at the qualifying matches, but they none of those really matter. They always just book however they need it to look. So I think New Day being in that match makes a hell of a lot of sense.
I agree.
Kofi on a ladder is a lot of fun at Mania. And then there's just a bunch of guys that don't really have a home right now. Most of the folks that were in the Intercontinental tournament, so Gable and Bronson Reed and Ricochet, you got Ivar floating around doing nothing. We still don't know where Kevin Owens is gonna wind up. It seems like he'll be in that triple threat, but it does kind of speak to how
triple threat.
If they do a triple threat with him, Orton, and Logan Paul.
Oh, I think they should.
I hope not.
Bruce Paul, yeah.
They should, but then it's tough to do a WrestleMania without Owens when he goes from main eventing to being left off the card.
Well, give him another match. Just have him go against, I mean, if anything, have him like maybe a triple threat with Grayson Waller and Austin Theory. That kind of makes sense.
Could be.
Or him and Kevin Owens versus Grayson Waller and Austin Theory. I don't know.
You just team Kevin Owens with Kevin Owens.
Oh, Kevin Owens and Cena. Sorry.
Oh, Cena. Yeah, Cena would be.
Cena, they're bringing Cena. Apparently, he's going to be doing, you know,
something.
A match.
He'll do something, and I think that's fine. The other match that was announced, finalized, no real surprise. We're going to get the tag match, The Rock and Roman Reigns versus Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins, with a million and one stipulations added to it. What I thought was really strong was Drew's promo on Raw, where
he's just been firing on all cylinders for the past couple of months. So
he has, but this whole idea of like, Seth, you're addicted to all this other stuff. Everyone told me to get over the bloodline thing, and now that I do, now you're obsessed with the bloodline guys. Like, this is dumb. Focus on my match. Don't focus on your tag match, which is an interesting wrinkle. Because normally a heel was like, go ahead, go do all the other bullshit. It's kind of what Rhea's doing with Becky. So I like that you're getting a slightly different take on it.
Yeah, I think that, Drew's heel character is he thinks he's a babyface still. He thinks he's the savior of WWE, and he's not like kind of doing it, you know, in a over the top way like Seth Rollins did with that Monday Night Messiah character. He's doing it in a very grounded, you know, he kind of just reminds me of a comic who thinks he deserves more. By the way, check out Dance Fatty Dance on YouTube.
That is kind of true. You're like, he's like the one guy who didn't get a sitcom in the late 90s and was like, it should have been me.
He's basically the David Brenner of wrestlers. That's who Drew McIntyre is.
Oh, he's funnier than David Brenner. Brenner always gave me, there was always a weird vibe to him.
I always liked David Brenner. But
I liked him, but there was always something to him that just felt, I don't know, kind of odd.
Yeah.
Maybe that's just me. That's what we're here for, to talk about 90s comedians as opposed to 2024 comedians and 2024 wrestling. And it's why I will not plug Dan Soder's special. There's only one wrestling Dan that I'm
willing to plug. Pod. Come on.
He's Dan's friend of the pod, special. But no.
It's incredible. I'm still fucking, I'm still, Stone Cold Law is still alive, brother. We
Don't get me wrong. I watched his special. It's hilarious.
Yeah.
My only point is I can only shill and whore for one wrestling Dan. And that's Saint Germain.
I appreciate it. But please watch Dan Soder's special.
Yeah,
Dan
go watch Soder's special.
I think it's probably special of the year. And I'm not just saying that because I was there for him. I was there with him while he filmed it.
It's very funny. The one thing about your special, I'll put this over, fuck it, whatever. I was there for the actual taping. And yes, there are weird cutaways to me. And more importantly, my bald spot is like front and center for about 80% of the show, which is annoying as fuck, but fun. I forgot a lot of the jokes. So I was like Rachel and my wife and I were watching it. We're like dying laughing while watching this, completely forgetting we were there and we knew some of the setups and punchlines. But
thank you, buddy.
It's genuinely a good time. If it fucking sucked, I would have been like, oh no, you should go check it out. It's like Out for Smokes. I've never listened to Out for Smokes. I've literally never. I keep forgetting that he had a podcast, and I'm like, I should go listen to this.
Yeah, it's you know, it was a lot of fun to film, and shout out Old Man Hustle and. You know, everybody who supported this the special and this podcast. Right now I'm building up my new hour. So I think I'm about halfway through the new special whenever I decide to film that fucker. So, yeah, man.
Well, hopefully you'll film it I can fly back to New York. Don't do like Los Angeles. I'm not flying to California.
I'm definitely not going to do Los Angeles. Although I will be at the Netflix is a Joe festival in Los Angeles. I'm going to be doing a small room, this hotel cafe. I'm going to be out in LA at the end of April and the beginning of May. So check me out, LA, our LA fans, if you're not there.
Are you planning on going to Philly for Mania?
No, okay. I don't think so.
I don't know if you were like taking a train and
no,
I don't know how far that shit is.
You know, somebody offered something there, but it wasn't enough cash. And it's like the one weekend I'm not going to be on the fucking road. Cause like, I'm only in Jersey City this weekend, but it's still on the road. And I'm basically somewhere every weekend for the next like 2 months besides WrestleMania weekend. So.
Yeah. I realize that the weekend I'm going to be in New York, you're going to be away. So.
Yeah.
It's fine. I'll have to make do with going to see.
Well,
Billy
I don't
Joel.
Know. Wait, what's that? Is it the end of March?
End of March. Yeah. I'm flying
well,
up to
I'm
go
only
see.
I'm going away for one night. So maybe that Friday.
That Thursday I'm going to Billy Joel at the Garden, and then that Friday I'm seeing Guster in Brooklyn. So
yes, you will miss me then.
Yeah, I will. The only night I had it open was like, oh, I can see Dan Saturday night, but no, you're going to be busy doing your fucking job.
He's Comedy Club, baby, Des Moines, Iowa.
Say hi to Seth Rollins.
Yeah,
that's all I pretty much know.
He's Colby Lopez there.
Oh, is that how they refer to him there?
There's Colby Lopez there.
More importantly, there is a possibility. I almost don't want to spoil this, but I'm going to spoil this. If you are in South Florida and you're listening to this Sunday, March 17th, St. Patrick's Day, Boca Raton Championship Wrestling is having a show. I'm going to the show. It'll be my first time seeing it. Dan, do you know who's going to be on this card?
No, it's just going to be like a Heroes of Wrestling situation?
No, actually, the card is actually pretty ridiculous of how good it is. There's one person that's going to be on this card.
Oh,
I have never met in real life, and he is going to be there. And there is a chance, guys, that I will be face-to-face with QT Marshall.
Dude, picture for the Facebook group, picture for longevity's sake, Robert.
I want a picture for the restraining order. I'm going to put them both on the wall. Next to one another, like I got invited to this show. I'm like, oh, this would be really cool.
The Spider-Man pose, so everyone, you guys pointing at each other and just.
No, I still have slightly more hair than QT.
I don't know about that.
No, it's going, but it's not quite a QT Marshall level.
Well, he's back in AEW running creative, man.
He's back at the helm. We'll get to Dynamite in a minute. I do want to touch on. Since we last recorded this, there are now three additional members of the WWE Hall of Fame that have been announced. Mm-hmm. The first is one where, like, you have to talk about it in, like, this very stilted, muted way, which is Thunderbolt Patterson, where you have to be like, oh, no, I understand. That makes sense. But part of it, like, if you don't know who Thunderbolt Patterson is, it's one of the shitty like wrestling things. Like, there's a reason you don't know who Thunderbolt Patterson is, because he was this asshole who had the temerity to say, hey, there should probably be basic working conditions for wrestlers. Maybe we should unionize, not to get like huge paydays, but like, it'd be cool if there wasn't just like a thin rope between the hillbillies with knives and the wrestlers. And also maybe an EMT somewhere in the vicinity of the building. And then he also had the temerity to say, hey, some of these promoters are a little racially insensitive. Maybe we shouldn't be, clan level assholes to wrestlers. So for those two egregious things, he got blackballed from the industry for a long time. So it's great that he's getting his due. He's also a preacher. He also runs a camp for disenfranchised youth. But part of me, this is the cynical asshole, is kind of like, well, this is Hunter owning a lot of the bad history of wrestling so that you can distract from all the Vince McMahon stuff that's going on right now.
I mean, that is the most cynical way to look at it. I don't know. I thought it was cool that he was, I didn't really think of, who would you have put in, I guess, as far as a black wrestler over at Thunderbolt? I guess there's a lot of answers for that. Maybe you're right. I mean, maybe that's the whole point. We talked about that in relation to the Rock program. Is that a way to just take attention off Janelle Grant? But I don't know. It seems like, have we talked about, Brock is reinstated?
And no, I had that coming up next. But
we haven't talked about that yet. Maybe this is a seamless way to transition into it.
Well, we still had a couple other Hall of Famers. Then we're going to come back to the...
I don't know. I don't know if that's the reason. Maybe... Yeah, Thunderbolt Patterson was, as a talent, he wasn't like that exceptional, right?
He was good. He was one of those guys where he was a strong promo. He definitely inspired Dusty.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the younger guys who go back and study tape will go and watch Thunderbolt Patterson promos. He was, he was a staple in a lot of different regions. You're kind of rounding out prior history and trying to correct some of the wrongs. And I think part of admitting him into the Hall of Fame, as much for his in-ring stuff, is his advocacy for health and safety for the boys in general and racial equality. So it does feel like a big pat on the back for them. But he is someone that under the Vince era, anytime it was like Black History Month, you never had Thunderbolt Patterson in those
I've
video
never,
packages.
Yeah, I never remember him in a
because
video.
Because he highlighted problems with wrestling. And I think this is Hunter kind of saying, like, we're going to own some of our past errors and mistakes. They're also inducting Muhammad Ali into the celebrity wing of the Hall
of
Fame.
Weird. I thought he was already in. So
I thought he was in, to be honest, because they've made, this is the Mike Lawrence. Well, they made action figures of him and he's in the video game. So I thought maybe he was already there, but no, he's now going in.
That Mike Lawrence or Jay Leno?
I always do Jay Leno whenever I do Mike Lawrence. Cause when Mike does his like high pitch thing, he does the Jay Leno. So I can't help it. It's a cool induction. It's weird because I'm sure they're going to announce Bray. So I feel like you're going to have two posthumous inductees, which is something Vince would never have done. But I'm glad Ali's getting added in there. And then they're inducting The Rock's grandmother.
Yeah, that one, that one seems like the most political induction. Look, I mean... She booked a territory, right? But
it's still, it's a woman.
Kind of a flip out on it.
It is, but it's a woman in wrestling.
There's so many promoters that should be in over her.
Yeah, but there's very few promoters that are related to The Rock.
That's also true.
And it's also, there's also very few successful female promoters. And obviously Young Rock, a runaway smash hit that they didn't cancel or anything. So people are enraptured by the story of The Rock's grandma, but good for her, I guess. It's fine. The now here's the awkward, not at all seamless transition, which is Brock Lesnar seems to have been quietly reinstated to WWE. There was conflicting reports as to whether or not he was removed from the roster page or he was always on the roster page.
Sergeant Slaughterhouse just entered the chat.
I was building up to the thing there, but fine. Yeah, we got Scott Chaplin who's joining us. It's like, feel like we're on a AM talk. We got Scott on a mobile.
Yeah, sorry if I sound bad. I'm driving.
You've sounded worse, so you're fine.
Good, good, good.
So Scott was vehemently opposed to Thunderbolt Patterson being inducted to the Hall of Fame. Scott, why do you do you hate this man who is so virtuous?
I mean, if I'm being honest, I didn't know about him until I found out about him this week. And man, what a good guy, right? And that clip that Mike Lawrence sent us of him arguing with Dr. Det. Wait, who was he arguing
Dr.
with?
Dr. D. David Schultz.
There we go. Wow, to have to deal with people like that all the time, and you're right, and somehow you live in a world where everyone's looking at you like you're wrong. That must have been absolute hell, but you know, he did his thing, and so yeah, I'm interested in actually like going back and learning more about him. That's the fun thing about wrestling, you know.
There's a cool like 15 minute highlight reel online of just Thunderbolt Patterson promos, and it's worth going out of your way to check out. Maybe I'll post it on the Facebook group. I think I sent it to you guys in the chat. We were just talking about the Mania matches and Hall of Fame, so. That's kind of what you missed. We're getting now into, looks like Brock is back. And it also looks like Nick Khan was, they tried to implicate Nick Khan in the lawsuit, but that didn't really gain any kind of traction. So first and foremost, if Brock is back, it kind of feels like what we've talked about on here before, which was the charges that tie Brock in were pretty tenuous at best.
Yeah.
Like, he was just a guy that, like, all right, your boss sends you, like, stupid guy shit, which is like, oh, I'm fucking this girl. You want me to have her, you know, send you nude pictures? And Brock seems like the kind of guy that'd be like, yeah. I don't know that that rises to the level of human trafficking. Also, again, not to be the asshole, when they're like, you know, oh, the inducement of sex with her is what led to Brock re-signing with the company. You know nothing of Brock Lesnar. Like, this is a dude who was motivated by, I want to make as much fucking money as possible. I don't think he cared about sleeping with a woman that also slept with John Laurinaitis. But again,
if it's just a bonus, it's wrong. And I think the main thing is, you know, he's implicated in a giant thing that's going to become a problem, right? It's already a problem for them. And so since he's implicated, why are you going to bring him back right now when you don't have to, when he's never around anyway? Like, he's a part-timer at best. He's like a once a yearer anyway. So to bring him out, it's like, why? To say fuck you to someone who's trying to make a case against Vince McMahon? Why not let this guy lay low? You know, at best, it's corny and embarrassing that they're even trying to bring him back in a cool way. Just let it simmer off. Gunther is fine.
Well, I think it simmered off. And then what happened was 2K.
No, I don't think it has simmered off. Well, I think we're about to go into a court case. And like, okay, so the fact that he is implied in whatever this is that she's saying, like, can they call him to court at any point? Because if he's someone who can be called to court, they need to let him cool off. Especially because he's someone who doesn't need to be there. Like, you know, Triple H is someone who's got to maybe step away for a moment and realize that he might have some answering to do, but he can't because he has a job that calls for him to be there daily. Brock Lesnar doesn't have a job that calls for him to be there daily. He is a special treat, and every time he shows up, it's just them giving him extra millions that he doesn't need. Okay, and so why give this guy extra millions right now when he's implicated in something that's gross? It's just, it's bad taste. Where we don't need it currently.
Because the charges that are, first of all, there's no charges against him. He's not a named defendant in the suit. It's Vince, it's Laurinaitis, and it's the WWE. Brock was sort of just the unnamed wrestler. The idea was when he was left out of 2K24, people were annoyed about it. They were really upset. It wasn't this like, good for you, we're glad Brock's not there. It's like, he didn't necessarily do anything wrong. If he did something wrong, he would have been named in the suit, and he's sort of being tangentially punished for the receiving of this and kind of responding the way that just a douchebag alpha male guy would respond, which isn't necessarily illegal. And to have him sit out WrestleMania or not be used at all, the audience kind of was excited to see him back rather than, ew, this is gross.
Well, they're not going to use him for WrestleMania. It seems like they're only going to use him for the Heyman induction, right? And I don't even know if he would do the inducing as much as he would be in clip packages and the like.
I think he'd be in clip packages. I don't think they're going to let him. He's not a really eloquent speaker.
No.
And we don't even, like, of all the Jews in wrestling, he's like the least worst one.
Yeah, I can't imagine. I cannot imagine his induction speech. You know, maybe there's something, Robert, to what you're saying about Thunderbolt Patterson, where, you know, if they bring back Brock, then the focus can be on Brock and not other people, you know, in the company. Because, you know, Brock, but I see what both Scott and you were saying. Like, you know, it seems
he's not an active roster member. And so bringing him out during this, it's just like, again, it's, you never need him. And so why do it now? It just looks like you're mocking a situation.
No, that's if you're like bringing out Vince and Laurinaitis, who were accused of really horrible things. It's the same thing with Nick Khan being named as like executive number one or whatever it was. They're like, and that his implication was like when he said to Janelle Grant, like, well, I know who you are. Most likely, and when I've read the complaint, it seems like, yeah, Vince was probably like, hey, I'm fucking this girl. I need you to find a job for her. That does happen in business. It's not a great look, but it doesn't rise to the same level as what Vince and Laurinaitis are being accused of, where you're like, oh, we need Nick Khan's head on a plate.
Well, I think regardless, we have, you know, less than a month until WrestleMania, and this will not be the only news. If I have a feeling, you know, like, if you went, you know, the Pinta and Mullins law firm, there's a few law firms that have been, you know, if you are a victim of WWE, please contact us. I do think there's going to be more stuff dropping before Mania. So, you know, maybe this is a way to get the attention off that. Maybe they found out, you know, like they found out it wasn't, you know, like, maybe Brock's lawyers came back and were just like, hey, you can't get rid of him. Like, he didn't do anything here. I'm not sure. I do feel bad. You know, I feel bad for Brock's daughter because she just won the NCAA. She just won it in fucking shot put, which is like kind of like an amazing feat. You know, like it would be all over, you know, it would be all over WWE programming if Brock was, you know, in a better place PR wise within that company. But yeah, I don't really know. I mean, I think we only know like a tenth of what happened so far, and I just think that, like, I just can't see them. My only thing is, like, I can't see them bringing Brock back unless they knew he was clean, just because if they brought him back and he was dirty, I mean, like, what's the fucking advantage of that? Like, they're just gonna, like, look. You know, it's like them bringing Vince back and then having to get rid of Vince again. Like that looked, if they had just kept Vince off TV, this wouldn't be nearly as bad. But because, you know, you had that SmackDown where Vince came and said hi to everybody and then had, you know, Stephanie, you know, give him a retirement speech, this looks like 100 times worse. So,
well, because at that point,
my only feeling is like, if there was a lot of culpability here, like, would they have brought Brock back? And I don't know the answer to that. I just, it doesn't seem like a smart move if there was, and I don't think they would do that. I just don't think they would do that.
So when they brought Vince back, all they theoretically knew at that point in time was Vince was having an extramarital affair, which is not a big surprise. He's talked about that all the time, that he cheated on my beloved Linda, but he then had used company funds to pay an NDA. That was what they were aware of when he was put out on TV at that time. The same thing with Nick Khan. They're like, none of us knew these allegations of non-consensual acts that she was forced to do, the extent of the trauma that she suffered. They're not alleging that at that point in time they necessarily were aware of any of that when they put Vince on TV. I think if they had an inkling of how bad these charges were going to be, they would have absolutely been distancing themselves from him sooner. But
the sale also hadn't gone through. So that was another thing. You know, there was that fear that, like, Vince was just going to, like, pull away from the sale and turn it back into a private company. And you know, those fears turned out to be unfounded, but they were real.
They were definitely real. I mean, the deal went through. Ari got what he wanted. Nick Khan, for most intent and purposes, got what he wanted. Rock made out pretty well in this situation. And then Vince just sold, like, $400 million worth of stock. So he's going to live large in Saudi Arabia, guys.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I mean, I keep coming back to that where I'm like, before, you know, because like what he's been accused of, you know, this is stuff that's arrestable. So, I mean, is he just going to buy a place in Saudi Arabia and essentially just escape before the shit hits the fan? I don't know.
Well, poor choice of words.
Like walking with the kid. It looks like
that's
a fucking
new Boca. That's the new Boca for all these goddamn boomers. They have to go to Saudi Arabia because they've ruined our lives.
Good. But Vince's fucking apartment's like 15 minutes. No, Vince's apartment's like less than 15 minutes from me.
Wait, I do have to go though, but I will say this, and I'll talk more about it on the Patreon. I thought Raw was amazing. The fact that you have Sami Zayn and Chad Gable at the end of it, and logically, look, I agree with the Sami Zayn decision, and I think it should be Sami at WrestleMania. But the fact that you watch that and you go, holy shit, is Chad Gable one of the best in the world? That was really awesome. And then Dynamite, boys, I don't want to hear any slander when you get to it. I'll be listening tomorrow because what we saw last night was magic. The feeling, boys.
So okay,
I had a lot of feeling, and if we had sponsors, we could drop in a Blue Chew ad right now because the feeling is back. AEW's back. Will Ospreay is here. Okada, Pac, the Bucks.
Okay, where's Scott. Omega? I think you're
there
breaking
up.
There's
a lot to like about Dynamite, but you can co-sign on everything that was on Dynamite, Scott. No,
Mercedes Moné's music wasn't that great.
I'm talking about Adam Cole's fairy tale.
That was rough. Yeah, the story time with Adam Cole was it was very different from the typical devil I'm used to. But ain't that like the devil to switch up on you?
Switch up to a new... What if that's his thing, his new gimmick is just switching to bad gimmicks every week?
Man.
Rumble Stiltskin now?
So dumb.
This is
all
the
right,
longest
boys,
Scott Waters, goodbye ever.
Yeah, I gotta go.
All right. Well, Scott will be on later on in the episode to give his Dynamite thoughts in full. Where he'll probably need a towel to clean up after, but we'll pivot to Dynamite, Dan, if that's cool with you.
Sure.
Dynamite or Dud. Mercedes Moné makes her big debut. Her music sucked. Her new thing is that she is the CEO, which is a better job than being the CFO of AEW, making sense of these fucking books. She talks about how this is a dream for her. That she had created a global revolution. She headlined, she's the first woman ever headline a pay-per-view. And then she said she has unfinished business with Willow Nightingale. My thing with Mercedes is kind of like Seth Rollins. When she's earnest, she sounds disingenuous. Like she sounds like...
I really like this promo. I disagree. I thought this was the best promo. I thought her promos in WWE kind of stunk, but I thought these were really good.
Those stunk, but when she's like, really, I'm here for you guys, and I'm excited to wrestle everyone in the back. We're like, no, you're there because they paid you a shitload of money, which is okay. I like when she's like the cocky character, not when she's just being genuine and earnest, because that feels less real. To me.
Yeah.
It was also weird that she brought up the Willow Nightingale thing, because this is that thing that Tony does that I kind of get annoyed about, where you're talking about something that happened for New Japan that was seen by a fraction of your audience, so they don't know what the fuck's going on.
No, Dave Meltzer had a moment on his podcast, not that I'm a subscriber that still listens to it, where he said getting on Ring of Honor is like death. And then he goes, oh, I shouldn't have said that. Something's going on with Uncle Dave where he's finally, you know, the wall is breaking. The AEW love is dissipating.
They're not paying him anymore. That's probably what happened.
That's probably.
Samoa Joe in the back cuts a really good promo about Wardlow, where he says that you've been sent for, sent by lesser men for crimes you didn't commit, which was a cool little line there. And then Adam Cole was sitting in what looked like an Old Spice commercial.
This was so bad that I forgot about Samoa Joe's good promo.
That's why I made sure to write it down.
That's how bad it was, because I forgot. I was like, oh, that line was really good. Like, Joe's such a great promo. And then this happened, and I was like, what the like, the match wasn't, like, it hurt. The match wasn't terrible, but because of that, the match was bad. Like, I couldn't care about this match. Yeah, it's just, woof. Man, Adam Cole is in the running for worst wrestler of the year just in terms of, like, the shit he's had to make us fucking sit through.
He sucks, and this did not help at all. This was just the ultimate go-away heat. We get Samoa Joe versus Wardlow, and when that match was over, my first thought was, oh, Wardlow's going to NXT.
Yeah, I mean, that's it seems like he's gone, right? I mean, just a clean finish.
It choked Wardlow, him out.
Yeah, I mean, Wardlow kind of just looked like Brian Cage looking to hook, losing to Hook here, right? I mean,
he was. There were moments where he looked good, and then there were moments where he did things that made no sense, which is why he needs to go to the performance center. Like faking a knee injury is a great act to do if you're a cowardly, shitty heel. When you're a big, giant powerhouse monster, you don't need to do that. Like your gimmick should be Brock style. Like I'm
stunned. Yeah,
I'm an ass kicker. I'm gonna fake a hurt knee. He got choked out and then vanished like in a video game. And then Swerve came out, and I will praise the crowd in Boston. They knew their role. They were cheering Joe against Wardlow, and then the second Swerve came out, they flipped the switch, and they booed Joe, and they cheered Swerve. So I think that worked. But the fact that this was the second match, like the second segment on the show, is weird, that this is your world title match, and it's just kind of your 8-15 match.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it just seemed like a total burial of Wardlow. It seems like he is not re-signing, and that's it.
Well, someone who just signed is Kazuchika Okada, and boy, how quickly he feels like a guy on the roster.
I thought he was good in this match,
but it was Okada and the Bucks versus Pac, Penta, and Eddie Kingston. And Okada, like, he didn't stand out as, like, this, oh, my God, I got to see this guy. He felt like he was very good in a really good match, not this guy's head and shoulders above everyone else. What a game changer. Was that a mistake,
Dan?
Well,
I think you're being a little too harsh. I mean, I thought him making Alex Marvez sing happy birthday was really funny.
Yeah, that was fun.
Especially after we just saw that, like, trash Adam Cole vignette. You know, it's just until they weren't had a block TV better. I'm more into Okada's matches. Like, thank God they didn't have him do something in the middle of the ring again. So I enjoyed this. I thought this was good. I guess they're doing Eddie Kingston and him next week. We thought they were saving it for the pay-per-view. The only thing that's weird about that is that they're doing Okada versus Eddie, and only one of the titles is on the line. So
wait,
like
what?
Yeah, I think it's only the Continental title. I don't think the Ring of Honor title. And what's the third one that Eddie has?
The who gives a fuck weight IWGP something or other.
Yeah, that one, the IWGP one, which I thought was just... I mean, I thought the whole point of that was consolidating the titles, but...
That's what I thought. I guess not.
No, I guess that they're going to... Which is like, that's really going to help Ring of Honor if, like, oh, you lost the more important title to Okada. But don't worry, Eddie will come back and defend this shitty one after fucking collision tapings. I don't get it.
I mean, this match is where they started hammering home the new ideology of AEW, which I don't dislike at all. This notion that they have the best roster, so it's ultra competitive and every match is an all-star match. And that's how they position this six-man tag, that all six of these guys are top-tier superstars. I don't mind that. And I think that it's a good cheat for Tony to be able to just justify matches by just saying, everything is super competitive here. Everybody is a top star. Here's a bunch of matches.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's, you know, I mean, their gimmick... Every wrestling company's fucking gimmick should be whoever the best wrestler on the roster is, right? I mean, they called the Attitude Era because it was Steve. They called it the PG Era because it was Cena. The Golden Era because it was Hogan. The best wrestler on the roster by far, and maybe the best talker, or close. Well, I guess MJF's a better talker, but I think the best all-around talent is Will Ospreay.
Where I was getting with you.
Yeah, so it's like, So what about him is unique? Well, the thing that's unique about him is that he's the best wrestler in the world, and no one, not even the biggest WWE stan in the world, aka Robert Karpeles, could argue that there's a better in-ring wrestler than Will Ospreay. There's not. So I'm all for leaning into that. But even if you're going to lead into that, like having a bunch of titles, I don't know how much that helps that.
It doesn't. And I was going to say, they put Ospreay in the next segment after this Okada match, and it really is night and day. Like, Okada, a guy in a six-man tag, Ospreay feels like a once-in-a-generation kind of superstar. He connects with the crowd. There's an enthusiasm. There's an authenticity. He feels like the guy who's going to single-handedly turn around AEW. The gist of his promo was that he did the Tiger Driver 91, and Danielson was critical of it. He's modeled his career after Danielson, and he's there to restore the feeling of AEW. And fuck if I believe him.
No, I thought this was a great promo. I mean, I think the whole Tiger Driver thing, it's a little bit, you know, online. It's a little inside. Mm-hmm. But whatever, man. I mean, like, he's done a great job. You know, he's a great babyface. Everyone was like, oh, only Ospreay can only be a heel. He's a great babyface. And I think you're just counting down the days until they, I mean, you got to do the title, I guess, he's got to win at Wembley. So, you know, whether he's beating Swerve or whether he's beating Joe, I mean, that almost feels like, you know, when Austin had to win at 14, he had to beat Michaels. Daniel Bryan had to had to become champion at 30. This feels like, to some extent, Cody has to beat Roman Reigns. This kind of feels like that, where at Wembley, Ospreay needs to win the title. So what's the most interesting way to get there, and who's the most interesting opponent for that? I don't know the answer.
I don't know. It'll be interesting to see.
But definitely have him be babyface, and by that point, the fucking Don Callis stuff should be completely away from him.
That's what I was going to say. It's weird that, like, Don and the family had nothing to do with this promo. This just felt like the once he's free from Don Callis kind of babyface promo.
Yeah,
I kept waiting for them to interrupt, and someone's got to have a polite conversation with Ospreay about how to look for your time cues better. He kept twitching, like his eyes, like darting around, like he was like really coked up. And I get that he was just looking for a time cue, which is even weirder for two reasons, production wise, guys. Number one, he wasn't getting interrupted by anybody. So you may be looking for a time cue because you're like, I got to get to a line to signal the music. Number two, Shivani's right there. Shivani has an earpiece. Tony will let him know, like, hey, man, we gotta wrap this thing up. The person who suffered the worst from this is they immediately cut to a promo from Deonna Purrazzo. And
oof, that was bad.
Do not want to compare Ospreay to Deonna Purrazzo in terms of promos.
God, she's so fucking boring, dude.
She's the worst.
It's the opposite of the excitement that I felt with Ospreay and Mercedes. Yeah, I mean, I don't have anything to even say other than, she's starting to have get off up my TV heat. But by the way, Scott brought up Raw. Is there anything Raw that we haven't brought up?
Yes, but we can
back into it. All right, we'll do it at the end of Dynamite. I feel like we gave Raw the short end of the stick, and that's a show people watch more. So,
well, I gave the long end of the stick of Raw at Something to Sports Entertainment with, which you can get on the $10 tier of the Patreon. Jay White took on Darby Allin before Darby goes and climbs a mountain. And I guess the story here was Darby was just trying to kill himself before climbing Everest.
Yeah. I thought that made him, my thought with that is, doesn't that make Jay White a babyface? Like, he's preventing Darby from killing himself on Mount Everest. It's almost like, you know, like when you used to like cut your toe off so you didn't have to go to Vietnam.
Yeah.
That's what this feels like. Why the, I mean, my thought from this is, why the fuck did they do this bang bang scissor gang? Like this, it felt like, you know, it feels like playing with your action figures. Like, oh, now you're bad guys, now you're good guys, now you're bad guys, now you're good guys. You know, they formed, they said they were going to be this big thing, and they really didn't do anything, and then they broke up. I do think Jay White, it would be an interesting heel character going off what I said. You know, if he comes back and he's like, I was trying to keep Darby from killing himself. Like, his heel character is heel who thinks he's a babyface, you know, similar to Drew. Like, I'm helping you. It's like a serial killer who, kills old people because they're terminally ill or something. Like he's the death angel. That would be his character, but most likely it'll just be a convoluted, you know, we don't like you, and maybe blame the fans for some fucking reason.
Yeah, Darby with the coffin drop thing to the outside, then he loses to Jay White, and it was like, oh, Jay White finally won a match. That's cool. Then the Acclaim come out to stop him and the Bang Bang Gang from beating up Darby. They finally turn on the Acclaimed. What? No one cares. I mean, if you were a sucker and you bought one of those shirts, then maybe you're mad about this. Otherwise, we all knew where this was going. I do like this idea of an Angel of Death killing older wrestlers that we don't want anymore, because our next match had Chris Jericho. Jericho and a hook versus the Gates of Agony. And Jericho needs to go away forever, Dan.
Well, that's not happening, dude. They're having him versus Hook next week.
They are.
They're telling the story no one cares about. It doesn't help Hook. What else is there to say?
Nope. It's the closest thing you're coming to, like, a vampire sucking the life out of a human.
It really is. It's close to that. It really is. I mean, I don't know. I think in Jericho's mind, he's helping Hook out. But, you know, I'm trying to think of an example. I mean, does this kind of remind you of, like, Jeff Jarrett and TNA, Hunter in 2005? I will say this. He's not doing what Hunter did. He's not putting himself on top. Or what Jeff Jarrett did and putting himself on top, but it does feel like a weird. It does feel like a weird booking black hole. Like it's like my mind has been trained to shut off every time Jericho's on screen,
because it's only serving one purpose now, which is trying to deflect any of the negative feelings people have about Jericho. So what he's doing is he's like, "Look, I'm Lionheart now. You like that? Look, I'm working with Hook. You guys like Hook." It's weird. It's creepy. It's like if Kevin Spacey joined a K-pop band. Like, that's kind of the feeling this has.
That would be more interesting in my mind.
I would tune in for that. Speaking of not at all interesting, Kyle O'Reilly is back, and he's
man. Scott's really gonna hate this episode.
The words he's saying of like, I thought I was never gonna like be able to pick up my own daughter because of my injuries, is a impactful statement. The concept of I'm back here because this is the most competitive roster on the planet and I need to prove myself is a compelling statement. When you're saying this with your hands in your pockets in this golly gosh gee aw shucks delivery, you sound like a fucking idiot. And then I would have been harsher on him, except a true fucking idiot showed up in Roderick Strong, who they were in this devil angle and they're this evil, sinister group. And now he's back to the whole, I'm going to scream your name really loud because it's funny to him.
They shouldn't have Kyle O'Reilly cut promos. That's kind of what my takeaway from this. It was better than, I mean, I think we forget how bad NXT Cool Guy Kyle was. That was maybe.
Oh, I loved Cool Guy Kyle. That was so weird.
That was so cringe.
It was so bad that it was like, I can't look away.
Yeah, he was like, what's his name from the dog from The Simpsons?
Poochie.
He was Poochie. It was. It had Poochie vibes.
I don't mind that.
I don't know, man. I mean, like, again, it's like, what story are they fucking telling? You know, are we getting the Undisputed Era back? Wardlow's clearly leaving the company, so
the story is, if you have friends who work in this company, you basically have a job. This is why. I've said it before and people have gotten mad at me on the board. Like, I would love a list of the roster and a black Sharpie, and I can just start crossing people off who I get you're talented. You don't need to still be here. And Undisputed Kingdom do not need to still be. If they were not on TV at all this week, if they didn't have this promo, the show would not have been worse because of it. It probably would have been better.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. There's nothing you're saying there is out of pocket.
The main event in the opening segment, Mercedes Moné said, and your main event tonight, Rio versus Willow Nightingale. And my brain immediately went, did they cancel the world title match? They did not. Your main event was Riho versus Willow Nightingale, which was a very spirited match. It was a very fun match. It should not have been the main event just because it didn't earn the opportunity to be the main event. This wasn't like the super hot story going into this this match. This wasn't the reason why people necessarily bought tickets. I get you needed to do the post-match stuff with Julia Hart and Sky Blue and Mercedes, but it felt really out of place for where they put it based on the build. And I think this is all I'm going to say, and I'm going to turn it over to Dan. They knew that they had Mercedes Moné signed for a while. Why the fuck were you not building up challengers and compelling storylines to lead to this return?
No, instead it just felt like Mercedes is like, I'm with the good guys. I'm with baby faces. Here's my dance. If I would have them, that wasn't a sentence. If I was in their position, I would have had, you know, Mercedes comes out. She saves Riho and Willow Nightingale. And then I would have had Willow turn heel. Just have her like, you know, try to turn Willow into a monster heel for a little bit instead of this, you know, like pasty smile, die Rocky, die baby face that she's been. And I think she's a good baby face. I understand why they've made her a baby face, but you need opponents for Mercedes. So, and we know that these two can have a good match together. So like I don't think the first story you want to tell with a new conquering baby face is, you know, veteran versus green girl on the roster, which is what her versus Will Nightingale would be. I think a far more effective storyline would be, you know, like a baby face realizing she's actually a monster heel, you know, going against Mercedes. So you completely eliminate any of the, you know, AEW stands and fans who are rooting for Willow, and you don't have that, oh, well, this is a WWE girl, you know, taking a spot from, you know, one of our homegrown wrestlers. That would have been my advice, but I don't know. Maybe they, because they had the Bang Bang Scissor Gang break up, they didn't want to do two heel turns, even though they were already kind of heels. They didn't want to do two heel turns in one show. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know. What I'm going to do is, my high spot and low spot are both coming from Raw. So I guess there's a chance to talk about two different segments from Raw. Cool. My high spot was the Cody sit-down interview with Michael Cole in the center of the ring. The reason why I liked this, number one, you get a chance to see Michael Cole be slightly human, which is fun. I like that that's been.
Well, they're bringing up the past. They brought up his heel turn. Like, you know, Hunter's doing a lot of good stuff here, and that he's just, you know, recognizing the existence of reality.
Yes, that's exactly what I had here. Number one, it was Cody being questioned by Michael Cole, where he's like, you know, it feels like Seth's the one who really wants to be able to beat Roman Reigns. How can you trust him? Which is a very fair within confines, you know, context. And then the second was Cody reframing this idea of finishing the story, because we've heard it ad nauseum. And then he's turning around. It was almost like a politician. He's like, you know, I'm doing this for the blind girl that came and saw me at a show, or the kid with cancer that I was the Make-A-Wish, or my mom who always dreamed of my dad holding this title, or my wife who stood by me when I was in shitty gimmicks. And you're like, oh, this is a groundswell feeling of why he should finish the story. Whereas before, it was very like father and son, cats in the cradle. Now it's all of us against Roman Reigns. I really like the shift that they did with Cody here.
Yeah, I mean, I thought this was great. You know, Cody's a really good promo, and he does white meat baby face. You know, like we thought we couldn't see like a white meat baby face like this. You know, every time they do something like this, it becomes like Lex Luger or something. And Cody has really changed the narrative on that. So I'm super excited, dude.
My low spot from Raw from this week, there was a women's tag match. Maxine Dupri and Ivy Nile against Indy Hartwell and Candice LeRae. Yeah. And in the middle of the match, Candice just turns into the internet. And she just starts berating Maxine that you don't belong here. There's a reason you were crying and being bullied by the fans. If you think that's bad, you should hear what we say about you in the back. And also, you are a disgrace to your dead brother. And then Maxine just starts crying. I get calling attention to the fact that like Maxine had gotten booed and bullied by the fans. Candice LeRae does not feel like the right vehicle for that because she is a white meat babyface. And the whole bringing up Maxine's dead brother was, I don't need to see this ever again kind of thing.
Yeah, they really, I mean, like, talk about like a, you know, it felt like a more unnecessary version of, remember when the Riot Squad put Natalya through like a cardboard cutout of her dad and we were like, why are you doing this?
Yes.
This was like, why are you doing this times 10? Like, why would, okay, it's one thing bringing up the internet. Like, you know, enough people talked about that online. I get trying to make that an angle. But to bring up the dead brother, I mean, that I did know this about her. And at least if you're going to bring up the dead brother, couldn't you do that like in a week from now? Like, did you have to do everything in this one segment? It was in pretty poor taste. And it really stuck out like a sore thumb because so much of the show was really good. And to have that was like, wow, what the? What did Vince write this segment?
Like, that did feel like a moment of like, yeah. Vince whispering in people's ear, you know, it'll be great, pal. I think he just wanted to see Maxine cry.
I think that's what it was. That's what it felt like. It felt like, you know, they just tried to, you know, there will be hopefully there will be a payoff for this, because a lot of times what Vince would do is he would just like have these incredible hurtful things said and there would be no payoffs. So maybe this will lead to a Maxine payoff. But my whole thing is like,
so you're thinking, you know, zombie brother?
Bring back the ECW zombie.
Remember that zombies match?
Oh my god!
But that's that it. It's
versus Damian Priest, right?
Yeah, it's like Maxine's brother and an army of zombies show up to go attack Candice LeRae next week.
God damn, dude! But you know, another thing is that they don't really have anything for Candice to do, and this is the closest they've had something for Candice to do, I guess. My high spot this week, Dark Side of the Ring, Buff Bagwell episode. If you haven't seen it, you know, it's everything the Earthquake episode isn't, but in a good way. Like, Earthquake is like, pull at your heartstrings. This is just like,
pull your
wild,
dick.
You know, like hillbilly, true Hollywood story. This is what this feels like. I didn't know that Buff had a fucking gunfight with his father. I didn't know that Buff's calf implants.
I knew about the calf implants,
which is a wild story. You know, I knew about the gigolo stuff, but they have footage from that reality show when he was a gigolo and having like softcore sex with that woman who looks a lot like Judy Bagwell. It was, they tell a story about, I mean, I don't want to blow everything, but Buff's best friend walked in on Judy Bagwell lifting Buff's dick over his balls so she could shave under it, which, I mean, that image, I mean, if you thought the image of Maxine's dead brother was bad, this is, I think, infinitely worse. But it's a great episode. I loved it. Low spot, I agree, the Maxine thing was
I like that wasn't your low spot.
No, that was my high spot. I think the Maxine was a low spot. I think the Adam Cole was
talking about Judy Bagwell.
I'm gonna bring up that Mick Foley's thinking about wrestling again.
Yeah.
That seems like a low spot. That seems like, I don't know how this is gonna, I understand the reason he wants to do this is he wants to lose weight, and you know, this would give shine to Matt Cardona, but I've also heard rumors that it's gonna be against Nick Gage. And this just sounds like a fucking nightmare. Like, don't do it, Mick.
No.
Just get a dietitian, get on the elliptical machine. I understand that your health is bad, but this is like, you know, I gotta get off heroin. Let me try fentanyl. Like, that's what this feels like. But plugs again, thank you guys for checking out Dance Fatty Dance. Let's keep those view counts going. Our Patreon this week, we're going to be doing a Marvel's What If, but we're going to be doing it with wrestling. So what if Nash and Hall never left WWE? What if Michaels didn't put Austin over? All those type of hypothetical scenarios, that'll be on the Patreon. Please become a subscriber. Join our YouTube. We don't have a YouTube. Join my YouTube. Join our Facebook group. Tell your friends about the show. And yes, see me at TIFF's. Next Friday in Morris Plains. I think it's Dojo East, but the venue is called Tiff. So thank you guys for checking out the episode. Thanks for all the Forbidden Dorks for writing comments underneath it. I really appreciate it.
Yes. And if you haven't heard enough of Dan and I, you can join Dan and I on Rumor and Innuendo from the Friday episode, which should be up now by the time that you are listening to this, with my host Dominic D'Angelo. It's every Monday through Friday at noon Eastern live. It's a half hour. We talk the news of the day. It catches you up. And more importantly, you don't have to hear Dave Meltzer. So a pretty good reason to tune in every day at noon Eastern. You can follow me on Twitter at @WWCreative_ISH. Dan, before we get to that, what do you want to tell the folks?
Oh, wash your hands.